Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Ward, and my guest today is Liu Bambuffetti. Liu's family winery is called Schiacciadiavoli, and it's in the Montefalco region of Umbria. Welcome, Liu.
Thank you.
First of all, I've got to ask you about your name. That doesn't sound very Italian.
Yes, my name Liu came from a lyric opera from Turandot made by Puccini. So actually it's a Chinese-Italianized name.
Okay, why did your father and mum choose Liu?
The story is not because he loved opera, but because when he was 4 years old in Montefalco, there was a young lady that was called Liu, and he remembers this lady like his first love when he was a child. So I'm the first daughter, and that's why I'm called Liu, the first love.
Okay, now the second...
Sentimental father.
Okay, the second question.
Schiacciadiavoli.
Oh, sorry, Schiacciadiavoli. I'll have to do the introduction again, okay.
Yeah.
Schiacciadiavoli, what does that mean?
So Schiacciadiavoli is... Schiaccia is a verb that means chase away. Chase away. Diavoli means devils. So Schiacciadiavoli is a name of an exorcist that lived near the estate long, long time ago, because the estate is very old. It's from 1884, and in that area there was this famous exorcist that used wine to save people possessed by the devil. That's why the name of the winery.
How was he paid? If I met this guy and I said, hey, listen, I think I've got a devil in my house, can you exorcise it? How would I have paid him? Would it have been with wine or with food or money? Or
I think he did he was a priest, so for him I think it was very important to have people not possessed by the devil around him. So I don't, probably with agriculture food, some salami or prosciutto will be very good, I think.
Was he quite a large priest? Was he quite a big guy or not?
I don't know, because it's something that we can read in documents, very old. And actually, all this area now is called where the winery is. The village close to the winery is called Schiacciadiavoli. So it's something that really dates long, long time ago. I imagine this priest very large.
Yeah, he sounds like he was a clever guy. He kind of invented this devil story so that he got a lot of free wine and free food. Yeah.
Yeah?
Not that I'm being skeptical about religion. Anyway, okay, so the winery dates from 1884. When did your father take over?
Actually, my great-grandfather took over in 1954, after the war, because he was a merchant of food, so he had enough money when he was 70 years old to buy the winery. Of course, after the war, the winery was quite cheap, so he could afford to buy it.
Okay. Was he from the region?
He was from Montefalco, so all my family is from Montefalco.
So at that time in Montefalco, were there many vineyards or not?
Yeah, the agriculture was different. There was a lot of farmers, not too many wineries, like the concept of winery that we have now. But let's say that everybody produced wine for the house, for selling to the neighbors and some clients around.
How did Montefalco suddenly become a boom region? What changed and when? When did it transform from being a local wine that was drunk between the villages and traded locally to an international?
I think even if the story of Sagrantino is very long, but the boom is more recent, since the 70s, when some producers, one was Caprai, but also other producers, tried to make Sagrantino just with Sagrantino grape in the dry way. So they had a wine very different that they could promote and explain in a different way. And from that Sagrantino start to became more and more known since the 90s, when he had a big boom. It's from the 90s that is recognized at the international level.
How would you describe your style of Sagrantino? Modernist, traditionalist, somewhere in the middle?
I think we are some in the middle, because first of all we don't want to change the personality of Sagrantino, so we are not processing Sagrantino in a very very, very soft way, even if I don't think very, very soft is a good word for Sagrantino. But so we try to keep the tannin and the structure of Sagrantino because we think it's his personality. In the same time, we age a minimum of 5 years. We put in the market minimum after 5 years because we need a development of Sagrantino. We use oak, small and big, for 2 years at least, and 1 year at least in the bottle, and we assure that when we sell Sagrantino, it starts to be softer, but of course with the characteristic of Sagrantino.
Okay, so whereabouts is the vineyard in the Sagrantino area?
We have a vineyard, a part is older, a part is more recent.
So you have vineyards in two places?
No, it's all in the same area, but we planted more in the 90s. So we have some vineyard before the 90s and some vineyard after the 90s. So the oldest vineyard are made with Palmetta Umbra, which is a particular shape made by 2 level of Guyot. This kind of vineyard produce around 20-25 grapes per plant.
25 bunches.
So actually it's quite productive, but because it's an old vineyard and the grape are not very, very compact, so we can have very, very good grape from that part. The rest, the more recent part, is Cordone Speronato.
Cordon.
Every plant is less productive. We have massal selection because the clonal selection here arrived very late.
So is there a big difference between the mass selection, so from older vines, in terms of the size of the grapes or how they taste compared to the new clonal selections?
Yes, we find a difference.
So
yes.
What are the differences?
It's less standardized. So we have some plants very productive, some plants a little bit less,
they have more genetic diversity.
Yes, there is more diversity.
Is there a difference in ripening though? Is it quite hard with these older vineyards, you say, with the mass selection, where you maybe have two vines together and one is ripe and one isn't quite so ripe? Do you selectively pick?
Yes, because we do with Sagrantino, we do 5 wines, 2 sparklings made with Sagrantino grape, 1 white, 1 rosé. We do Sagrantino dry, Sagrantino passito, so the sweet Sagrantino, and we do Montefalco Rosso, which has a part of Sagrantino. So because of that, we can pick the grape in different moment according with the wine we have to do. So this is interesting because we can pass 3 times usually, or select some vineyard more adapted for the wine we want to do.
So you say you can go to the same vineyard 3 times and say the first picking would be for sparkling.
Yes, the second for passito and the third for Sagrantino dry.
So the second one for passito?
Yes.
Ah, so you pick them and then you dry the grapes?
Yes. So the sparkling we pick around August, end of August. For sweet Sagrantino we pick mid-September, and for Sagrantino dry we pick end of October in a regular vintage. 2017 we finished the harvest the 9th of October because it was very in advance everything.
Tell me about how you make the sparkling Sagrantino. So you're basically making a white sparkling wine from a very tannic red grape. How does that work?
So the white sparkling is made with Sagrantino 85% and Chardonnay 15%. We age 7 years, so it's an interesting product because we can really recognize the Sagrantino, of course not from the color. We pick the grape very early when the grape change color from green to red, so it's not really mature. The acidity is very high, and we pick the grape by hand, of course. We put in the press and we press very, very quickly and very softly. So we extract just the clear juice. We blend with Chardonnay. We ferment, and then usually in spring we add sugar and yeast. We bottle and we keep in the bottle 7 years before to disgorge.
So 7 years on yeast.
On yeast, yes. It's interesting because you can see that it's totally different from any other sparkling.
What makes it different?
First, the taste, is a special taste. The structure is unbelievable. The alcohol usually is around 13. cuisine, so it's more structured. For sure, it's for food, for gastronomy.
So, what would be a good dish with your sparkling Sacrantino?
Cheeses are very good with our sparkling. Of course, my family imports baccalà since generation.
Really?
Yes.
So you got another business?
Yes. The other business is the import of baccalà from Iceland and Norway.
So that's salt cod.
Yes, salt cod or dried cod that is called stoccafisso. So with baccalà is great, of course.
Did you develop this sparkling wine because of your fish business?
Also.
Was that really?
No, actually the bet was that my father think that after the Prosecco, people will drink local sparkling. It didn't happen yet, but we think that it will happen in the future.
Do you have like a bar in your... When tourists come to your winery, is there anywhere where they can drink the sparkling wine, or do they just buy it and take it and drink it at home?
No. We make a tasting of all our wines, so it's possible to taste in our winery.
And can they try the salt cod with it as well?
Yes. We propose very often, yes. Here in Umbria, we still eat very often.
So let's go on to, that was the sparkling. Do you make a sparkling rosé as well?
Yes, the sparkling rosé is made with Sagrantino 100%.
So how do you do that, given that Sagrantino has got a lot of colour? How do you make a sparkling wine from Sagrantino that doesn't have too much of a pink colour?
Yeah, the difference between the white and the rosé is that the rosé is macerated 6 hours in the press. In the 6 hours, we extract this light pink colour, because how I was telling before, the grapes are not mature, so there is not so much exchange between the skin and the must.
So that's the Spumante Brut Rosé. Do you call it rosé, not rosato?
Yeah, rosé.
Oh, okay, a little bit of Frenchification there, interesting.
I studied in Bordeaux, so...
Did you?
Yeah.
Really? What, winemaking?
Yes.
When were you doing that then?
2006.
So you got a degree in winemaking and a degree in stockfish and salt cod?
No, stockfish, no. My brother and sister did it.
So what did you learn in Bordeaux that would help you? Obviously, we think of Bordeaux, the classic Bordeaux is a wine that can age a long time. It can be quite tannic when it's young. And when we think of Sagrantino, we can think a similar thing. What did you learn from Bordeaux that's helped you and your family with the Sagrantino Reds in Umbria?
In Bordeaux, for sure is a different wine region. Sagrantino is another world comparing with Merlot or Cabernet from Bordeaux. But I learned how to do a lot of experiment, because I was working in a winery owned by Denis Dubourdieu, which was a professor at the university. And so he was very, very involved in experiments and, trying a new approach. So really loved to be there, because he really teach me a lot.
So one of his specialties was skin contact whites to extract aromas?
Yeah, he was actually very, very specialist on the white Bordeaux and Sauternes. They have Chateau d'Oisiden, which is a Cru Classé, Chateau Reynon, Clos Floriden, Chateau Radonc. So he was experimenting a lot in the white reduction way, more than oxidated way.
So protecting the juice or the wine from any kind of oxidation for the aroma expression. So has that influenced you at all in your white wines?
Yes. Our white wines are made with mainly Grechetto, or with one, which is Grechetto 100%. So this is a fresh, fruity white wine, just aged 4 months in stainless steel.
So do you do skin contact with that as well?
No, with this, no.
So that's just press, picked?
Yes, yes.
Pressed. Do you pick it? Do you make several pickings for the Grechetto, like a slightly earlier one, a middle one, and a later one, or not?
No, for Grechetto, the process is easier. Then we do Montefalco Bianco, which is another DOC. In this case, we use 50% of Trebbiano Spoletino, which is a local variety, very, very special. Even if it's called Trebbiano, it's not Trebbiano family. And we have also Grechetto and Chardonnay on this wine.
So what, in terms of that wine, everybody pretty much knows what Chardonnay tastes like, melon, yellow fruit, that kind of thing. What would the Trebbiano Spoletino bring, and what would the Grechetto bring to that that particular white wine?
So Trebbiano Spoletino, the aromas are very complex. Someone say that is the Riesling of Umbria because the aromas are not really fruity but more herbal, you know.
Are there any chemical compounds in that? Because as a scientist, come on, give us the chemical compounds in the Trebbiano Spoletino. What is the scientific name for the flavors?
In Trebbiano Spoletino, actually, the DOC changed in 2016. And before, the DOC of Montefalco Bianco, so in 2015, was Grechetto 50%, Trebbiano Toscano 30%, Chardonnay 20%. So till 15, we didn't use Trebbiano Spoletino. It's just the last wine, the 2016, that has Trebbiano Spoletino 50%.
Was that to try and create a wine with a bit more personality?
Yes, the idea of consortium was to have wines with more personalities, more local. So it's a kind of a new discover of a old grape that was almost forbidden. So I think we have to do a lot of way on this grape. We are just at the beginning to study more this grape, to know more information about this grape.
Is the Spoletino easy to grow?
Yeah, it was grow forever in the valley because Montefalco, you know, we can see from Montefalco the South Umbrian Valley. This valley was an old lake. So the origin of this area is a lake that was
dried. Dried up. It was a former lake bed.
Yeah, so actually all around here actually is clay soil with a little bit of sand from the lake. Very, very small amount of limestone because the origin was not the sea but the lake. So Trebbiano Spoletino was grown mainly on the flat. The vines were very big and the old style was marriage vineyard, means the Trebbiano Spoletino attached with a tree. Usually, I don't know the name in English, olmo or acero.
So basically the vines were growing up trees.
Yes, so this is the old style. It's not very difficult, but the characteristic of Trebbiano Spoletino is that ripe after Sagrantino.
Even later ripening than Sagrantino.
Yes, so November.
So that's almost impossible, isn't it? Because Sagrantino is probably the latest ripening grape in red wine grape in Italy anyway.
Yeah.
So is it quite disease resistant then, the Spoletino?
Yeah, this is resistant. Sagrantino is very sensitive to mildew, peronospora.
So downy mildew. And the Spoletino?
Spoletino is quite resistant, you know. But he had like a strong taste, big acidity, you know, was not a fruity wine.
So you said it was herbal. I mean, when you say herbal, is it like peppery? Is it spicy?
Yeah, it's spicy. It's like
tomato,
Mediterranean
herbs.
I think we have a lot of future for this wine, for this grape, but we need to have more studies and information because it's something that we rediscovered really recently.
So let's go off to the red wines, the Sagrantino. So you make obviously several wines. You make a Montefalco Rosso.
Yeah, this is our biggest production. Yeah.
So tell me about the Montefalco Rosso. That doesn't have to be 100% Sagrantino, does it?
No, absolutely. It's obligatory to have mainly Sangiovese grape from 60 to 70, and till 2015, we changed the disciplinary also of Montefalco Rosso in 16, like for Montefalco Bianco. So before the 16, we should have from 60 to 70 of Sangiovese, from 10 to 15 of Sagrantino, the rest was free. And we had 60% Sangiovese, 25 Merlot, 15 Sagrantino. This kind of wine, I think, is very, very drinkable. It's very easy to combine with food. So we actually produce a lot of Montefalco Rosso because our public love it.
Good cash flow.
Yes, exactly. And now in 16, the consorzio changed the disciplinary, so we can have till 80 of Sangiovese and till 25 of Sagrantino. So the concept is the same with Montefalco Bianco. Push more the local variety.
So basically getting rid of the French varieties.
Slowly, yes.
How do you feel about that, having given the fact that you studied in Bordeaux? Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, for sure. I spent very, very beautiful years over there because in Bordeaux, I was surprised that on 5 people, 3 works in the wine business. So, you know, for me it was a very big full immersion on the wine business. Here in Montefalco, we are in the middle of Umbria, so, you know, it's not exactly the same life. But I'm happy because in the last years, Montefalco is really becoming lively and with a lot of people arriving asking for Sagrantino. So it's, the challenge is exactly that, make it this wine region very modern about you know, culture and
so we always think of Sagrantino as quite a very tannic, tough wine, and globally the trend has been to make well, certainly when you were probably in Bordeaux, using a lot of Merlot, softening the wines up with oak, warm extended maceration to make these big wines that would get 100 points in the Wine Spectator. So it's interesting that you're in Sagrantino in Montefalco, which is a very tannic red, and you're getting rid of the Merlot that could make that wine softer, and you're saying no, we're actually going to focus more on our Sagrantino. How do you make it softer tasting in the winery? What are you doing in the vineyard and the winery to make Sagrantino softer?
Yeah, first of all, the maturation of the grape is very, very important. So we try to keep the grape in the vineyard as much as possible, even if sometimes is going far in the autumn, but it's important to have the tannin that are sweet.
So do you analyze the grapes to see the extractability of tannin? Is that what you're looking for, to pick
yes.
when it's easier to extract? So how do you do that, and what are you looking for?
Yes, when the tannin are really soft, we can bring in the winery.
You can harvest.
We can harvest. And
but how do you check that, though? Are you just going out eating grapes?
Yes, yes. We just try the tannin, you know, personally. And sometimes, of course, we lose some aromas. The alcohol is quite high, of course, but this is very important parameter. Then depends from the quality of tannin. We decide how long the maceration have to be. In 15, we did 60 days of maceration.
So 60 days on skins?
Yeah. This year, we did 22.
2017?
Yeah, because the tannin were very, very big and hard, because a very dry and sunny summer. Perfectly healthy, but with tannin, yes, quite rough. So we need to adapt the extraction of tannin. This is really very important.
So how long was it on skins in 2017?
22 days.
Right, that's very short, isn't it?
Yeah. The average is 30 days.
What were the pips like? What were the pips like in 2017?
No, they came mature. They became brownie. But you can see really the taste, and also the skin were tannic.
Were they thick?
Yeah, in the 17. So just not the seeds, but also the skin. Then we ferment in oak. So it's fermented in 100 hectoliter oak.
Wooden vats. So all of your Sagrantino is fermented in wood?
Yes, all.
So are you the only winery that does that?
I don't know, but for sure we saw that aromas of fruit reduce a little with that, but in the same time the wine is much more soft since the first day, because it's better to reduce the tannin or make the tannin rounder at the beginning than at the end.
So you're saying making the tannin rounder by fermenting the way that you do, rather than trying to use small oak barrels to soften the tannins,
yes,
to polymerize
them. We experimented that. It's easier to make a soft wine if we start at the beginning than if we pretend to do it at the end.
So that's kind of almost like a traditional Bordeaux. In the old days, the Bordeaux's classic, and some of them still do, have big wooden vats for fermentation, and then they age, just refine the wine in smaller barrels. Is that where that idea came from, your Bordeaux influence?
No. No, you know, I think for sure I saw a lot of wooden vats in Bordeaux and I was in love with that. But I think it's also because we experimented personally this way.
Do you consult to any wineries locally or do you keep all of your secrets to your family?
No.
Have you been asked?
Just for my family.
Have people asked you to consult?
No, because, you know, we here, the one region is very small. Actually, never thought about, you know, you are the first to tell me something like that. You know, I didn't think about it because I was focused on our family business. So
very diplomatic answer. But people must have seen the results that you get in, and they must know that you've worked in Bordeaux. They must know that you're doing things a little bit differently to how things maybe would. I mean, I haven't heard of many producers fermenting in big wooden vats in this region. Are you the only one?
Really, I'm not sure because...
The diplomat.
No, really, I am not sure. For sure, people is experiment. I know that people is experimenting different vats like ceramic, cement, amphora. You know, like everywhere. We are in the middle of Umbria, but we are connected with the rest of the world. So we are trying the possibilities. For our experience, we are happy with the wooden vats.
And where did you buy them from? Were they from France?
Yes, we all our wood is from France, yes. And I visited personally the companies.
I have absolutely no doubt that you did that. So just one final question about the red wine making. Obviously, if you're leaving the wines on skins for quite a long time, presumably when you press, you're not really looking to press very much.
No. Now, with the pressed wine, we don't use for Sagrantino. We make the Umbria Rosso. We separate the pressed wine and use for something else.
So if somebody tastes your wine blind and you read a review of your wine, or you could write a review of your wine yourself, which three words would you be most happy with, most proud of? If somebody said, I tried the Scaccia Diavoli red and it had this and this, it was a lovely wine, what would you like people to say?
Elegant, but with a big body, and you really feel the potential of aging. That's why if we do a blind tasting with old vintages, our wines always looks very young. You know, I'm not telling because it's our wine, but because we did this kind of blind tasting. I don't know if it's because the soil or the way how we produce, but after 15, 20, 30 years, our wines are never died. I think it's interesting when we taste when it's younger that people can recognize this potential.
Okay, so what about the main flavors then?
The main flavors are pepper, black pepper is very strong in our Sagrantino, blueberry, some vintages, the freshest vintages.
The cooler years, yeah.
Yes, I find a lot of like violets, dried roses, a lot of floral.
Okay, so you make a Montefalco Sagrantino passito. What is a passito? How do you make that?
Yeah, so we pick the grape, we lay on the straw mats. We dry for 2-3 months according with the vintage. This year was shorter because the grape were already kind of dehydrated. Because it was a dry year.
2017 we're talking about.
And we ferment usually in around Christmas. That's why the name Sagrantino. Sagrantino means sacrament. So because in the past we had just the sweet version was fermented in Christmas and drink in Easter. That's why sacrament, Sagrantino.
So like a sacred sacrificial wine.
Yes. So now we still ferment around December. We still say Christmas, but actually it's December. And we don't drink anymore in Easter of the next year. Now we drink after 5 years, in Easter, of course, but also in other occasion.
Okay, so do you age that one in wood?
Yes, for Sagrantino Passito, we age in a new barrel. So it's the only one that is aged in new barrel.
How much wine do you get from a bunch of grapes? If you pick, say, 10 bunches of Sagrantino for the pasito?
1.8.
Okay, so how much do you lose?
We lose 75%.
Okay, so basically if you're picking what could be a litre of grapes in September, you're actually going to get...
If we have 100 kilo of Sagrantino, we have 18 litres.
Which is nothing. Is that your favourite wine?
For sure. I like that this is really the old style, the tradition. So I like to think that in the past they drink more something like that. Now I'm more dry wine lover, but I mean, I like to drink with my friends during the holidays. Really make that very too much sense for me.
Do you have food with the pasito?
Yes, now we eat chocolate or dried aged cheese. In the past, it was very typical to eat lamb with pasito because lamb is the meat for the Easter.
Okay, so sweet meat with sweet wine.
This is the tradition recipe.
Okay. Do you think you'll ever go back to Bordeaux? Would you like, if somebody said, look, you can't work for your family winery now, you have the freedom to work anywhere as a winemaker in the world, where would you go? Would you do it in Bordeaux? Would you go to California?
This is a hard question.
You have to answer.
I don't want to be like impolite, but I prefer to stay in Italy.
Okay. But where would you go? Brunello, Montalcino? Would you go to Barolo?
Yeah,
Aglianico?
Yeah, Aglianico, Barolo are perfect because still tannic grape.
Do you like tannic grapes?
Yeah, I mean, if I feel a wine, because I grew up with Sagrantino, for me the average of tannic is very low. I mean, I need a lot of tannin to say that a wine is tannic.
So your idea of hell would be going to Beaujolais, you know, for the rest of your life. Yeah. What about the Rhone? Do you like Syrah?
Yes, I like Syrah. In Côte Rôti, that in the past they make a mix between Syrah and Viognier. I tried, but you know, this is for my family and myself. I tried to mix Sagrantino and Grechetto, but you know, I can't tell to the people from the consortium because they will kill me.
Okay.
So it's just wine for myself that I do sometimes like that.
Okay, I just want to say thank you very much, Liu, for coming in. Liu Pambuffetti from the Scaccia Diavoli Winery in Montefalco. It's been fascinating talking to you, particularly about your experiences in Bordeaux and how that has informed your winemaking in Umbria. And I wish you every success.
Thank you so much. Bye to everybody.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.